Good afternoon or good morning for the representatives joining us from Hawaii. I know we have organizations from all around the country, so I want to take a moment to thank everyone for participating in today's discussion on developing homeless courts in your community. Addressing the legal needs of homeless veterans is of critical importance, and the Homeless Court Program provides a truly innovative method of meeting these needs to help foster independent living and remove barriers to housing and employment. My name is Bailey Crone, and I'm the Director of Technical Assistance at the National Coalition for Homeless Veterans. I want to briefly go over a few logistics for today's teleconference before turning the call over to our speaker, Steve Binder. Everyone should have received an updated reminder for today's call with the teleconference call number and a link to the teleconference webpage, where you can download the Homeless Court Calendar and a Homeless Court Program Guide from the included links. This email came from conferencecalls@nchv.org, so if you don't see it in your inbox, please check your junk mail folder. You can also access these two documents by going to the NCHV website at www.nchv.org and clicking on the gray box with the red outline. It's on the right-hand side of your screen, and it says NCHV Conference Calls. Again, if you go to the NCHV website, it's www.nchv.org. There's a gray box on the right-hand side with a red outline that says NCHV Conference Calls, and if you click on that box, it will bring you to a landing page that has the two materials for today's call. Also note that the audio and notes from today's call, including any of the questions that are asked at the end, will be available on this webpage by the end of next week. If at any point today you run into technical difficulties, please send me an email, and I'll do what I can to assist you. My email address, if you don't have it, is bcrone@nchv.org, and it was also included in the email sent out today. We're packing quite a bit of information into today's call, but we'll leave plenty of time at the end of the call for questions. Please make note of your questions during the discussion today, and if we don't get to your question during the Q&A period, or if you have a question or comment to make after today's call, please feel free to send that to me, and I'll make sure to share these questions with Mr. Binder and with the American Bar Association's Commission on Homelessness and Poverty. They're also doing really great work in service to America's homeless veterans. Today we're really lucky to have with us Steve Binder, who is currently with the Office of the San Diego Deputy Public Defender. Steve founded the nation's first homeless court in 1989, and when he began practicing law, he was assigned to counsel misdemeanor defendants in the arraignment court of the County of San Diego. One prominent group of defendants was from the homeless population. Steve listened to these defendants and saw that they often struggled with the problems that were largely ignored by the criminal justice system, such as mental illness, substance abuse, and joblessness. These defendants, including homeless veterans, were sentenced to fines they often couldn't pay in conditions that impeded their ability to fully reintegrate into society. When Steve learned that participants at Stand Down felt their most pressing issue were outstanding warrants, he dedicated himself to addressing this problem, finding time outside his regular caseload to make it happen. Since then, the annual Stand Down has expanded from veterans-only monthly sessions to events open to all homeless people. Steve developed the Homeless Court Program model and initially spread it to cities in the West and the Southwest as a model for community change. Now, Steve provides trainings to service providers from around the country on adapting and using the Homeless Court Program, or HCP, model to serve homeless veterans with legal issues. Steve, thank you very, very much for joining us today and for sharing your knowledge. I know you have a lot to contribute, so I'll turn the call over to you.
Thank you, Bailey, and thank you to NCHV and the ABA for all your work in helping with this and just other legal issues for our veterans and homeless population at large. But also thank you to all the attendees for your work and for your interest in this particular program. So the Homeless Court is a special session of the Superior Court that is actually held at Stand Down and in local homeless service agency community rooms to address a full range of misdemeanor offenses. Its purpose is to provide access to the court, not just for the clients, but also for the court to our clients, so that together they can successfully resolve cases. The large problem that we faced in 1989 was the court finding homeless people in front of them in the traditional court setting, establishing convictions. Sometimes defenses would be raised. Both prosecution and the defense would become frustrated because however much a conviction might be obtained or even an acquittal found, the person who was homeless still had a tremendous amount of struggles ahead of them, and we would face the very strong likelihood that people would be in front of us yet again. The homeless court was designed to address the frustrations of all the criminal justice practitioners, defense, prosecution, and the court, as well as the participants. And the veterans at Stand Down provided the very first opportunity for us to successfully develop a mechanism to resolve these cases. In short, at the end of the very first Stand Down, the VA conducted a survey. And at the very end of that survey, of the 500 homeless veterans who responded, 116 of them said they needed help with outstanding warrants. That's one in five homeless veterans. And we took that statistic to the presiding judge, who very politely listened to what Stand Down was about, what we were proposing for a court, and took the time to deliberate, but also very clearly indicated that the courts were open 5 days a week, 8 hours a day, that these veterans could come in anytime they wanted to resolve their cases. And we very politely turned to the judge and said, nothing personal, Your Honor. The participants don't trust the courts. They are fearful for coming into court because they are usually ordered to pay fines that they don't have the money to render, and they're thrown into custody. That leaves them homeless after they're released from custody, because they are literally released back to the streets. And we convinced the court that we could resolve cases on site at Stand Down, held on a handball court underneath camo netting, and effectuate justice. The court clerk for the San Diego court at the time was the one who convinced the judge that he could literally pick up a courtroom, hold proceedings on a handball court, track all of the cases, the files, the court dockets, and the resolution, and implement them and register them in the court computer upon the return so that the court orders were real and effective. And what we did going into Stand Down was we sat down with the prosecution and we worked out a full range. We recognized that participants would be coming in with a full range of misdemeanor offenses, the vast majority of which are public nuisance offenses. They could be drinking in public or peeing in public, feeding the birds, molesting a trash can, drunk in public, or the more serious misdemeanor offenses that might include petty theft, resisting arrest, even DUIs. And the homeless court today addresses a full range of misdemeanor offenses. However, it does not address felony offenses, domestic violence, or parking tickets, which are a very real concern for homeless participants, but unfortunately outside the jurisdiction of the criminal courts. And so in working out our disposition agreement, we developed four core principles. To headline it, the four core principles are that participation in the homeless court is voluntary, that there is a progressive plea agreement with alternative sentencing, and fourth, that there's an assurance that no one goes into custody against their will. And we've had people come in actually asking for custody at Stand Downs in the past, but we talk to them about there are greater opportunities out there than custody, that custody is a short-term solution to whatever problem they're facing, and that the services available at Stand Down and now through the homeless service agencies that feed into our monthly court sessions, that these services are more productive both for the individual and the community at large, including the courts, bringing a fuller sense of justice and public safety for all involved. The progressive plea bargain is an agreement with the prosecution that acknowledges the vast majority of the offenses that individuals are facing are a result of their homeless condition. That the things you and I do in the privacy of our home is something they necessarily do in public. And sadly, that there aren't enough services offered or available to meet the demands for people who are out on the streets, and that sadly, a lot of the people who are on the streets end up giving up on programs and services as much as we as a society tend to sometimes, unfortunately, give up on them. Because they then in turn develop a mindset that there are other people who need these services more than they do, that they can take care of themselves. Our challenge is to offer a plea agreement that, and this is where the prosecution's agreed, where 90% of the cases are dismissed when people stand before the court, but that those court orders, those dismissals, are based upon the accomplishments that people bring to the court when they stand in front of the judge. And this is part of what makes the homeless court program significantly different from other collaborative justice programs. The biggest feature being that the only way, the way people get into homeless court is a referral from a homeless service agency. So that when that agency refers the individual in, that person has the assurance, the court and the prosecution has the assurance that that person has accomplished some level of success in their programs, and they have engaged in some measure of activities that each program verifies when they make that referral. But I digress a little. So the progressive plea bargain essentially notes that there's 90% of the cases dismissed, that the more serious misdemeanor offenses, DUI cases being the exception, are automatically reduced to lesser offenses and sometimes often dismissed given the level of accomplishment people have engaged in their programs and the nature of the offense. So, for example, somebody who committed a petty theft is someone you we look at the discovery, what the prosecution has on the particular case, and we note that that might be something where an individual is released, for instance, from county mental health after having become stabilized, that they were let out at night, that they went into a convenience store, took coffee and a Danish, sometimes alcohol and cheese, and that the program has worked with the individual to stabilize them, mental health services, that the program has stabilized them, offering the basic food, clothing, and shelter, and that the program has helped situate an individual where they can be more self-sufficient. They won't be in a position to take things. They understand the negative consequences of that, and that the program has challenged the individual to look deep inside, recognize their needs, and address them in a more constructive manner so that public safety is addressed. Along with that, we make sure that whatever was taken from the store, for instance, has been either retrieved or restitution is made prior to resolution of those cases. We want to make sure when somebody stands before the court, that person comes clean in all aspects of their lives. Similarly, if somebody has an under the influence of a controlled substance, which on its face, if they were to plead to it, is 90 days custody, that is often satisfied by participation in any AA meetings, relapse prevention classes, chemical dependency, and the like. But as you may often know, especially the service providers on the line, people are sometimes using their substances to self-medicate on mental health issues. if we can illustrate through the providers that people are compliant with their medical treatment and properly connecting as far as treatment providers, attending their meetings, that will also go a long way to helping resolve the underlying causes of the offense and provide a measure of public safety both for the prosecution and the court, but equally as important for the participant. Because when an individual stands in front of the judge and the court looks at the criminal offense, that's a picture of one aspect of their life. When they look at the individual and they see the accomplishments of the they made in their program, they see a much fuller picture of who that individual is. The crime, the offense, is a snapshot in time. The participation in program activities is a much fuller picture, shall we say a moving picture, of what an individual's accomplished in their program. And so that we've covered that individuals are voluntarily participating in their program. The progressive plea bargain is an agreement that's based on the alternative sentencing component of the four core foundations for the homeless court, and that alternative sentencing is program activities. We're not talking about volunteer work or busy work. We're talking about work that individuals are doing to reclaim their lives, work that may be addressing medical issues, be it physical or mental health issues, work that is involved in obtaining employment that could be job searching or job skill training, or in turn, work that people are doing to address substance abuse or mental health issues. Those are some of the predominant issues that our clients are facing and some of the key causes of the offenses that they present before the court. And the big advantage with the homeless court that is not found in the traditional court setting is that in the traditional court setting, prosecution and defense, they have their selective images. Well, the images that are projected out to the community. Prosecutors are the good guys. They're protecting public safety. People, sadly, look at defense attorneys as they just represent clients. They're overwhelmed. They'll say anything to help get their clients off from these offenses to protect them or to get them out of custody. The homeless court sidesteps some of those discussions and helps both prosecution and defense through collaboration work to address the underlying issues. And it helps them focus on a solution that has a smart on crime approach where treatment addresses the underlying cause of the offense and clients are involved in the community working on constructive life-affirming activities that helps to illustrate why or give a foundation for why they will not be going back to drinking in public, peeing in public, illegal lodging, even the petty theft and under the influence offenses. In short, that's why the court also, the fourth core of the homeless court foundations is the assurance of no custody. As I tell clients at our counseling sessions, that doesn't mean you get to stand in front of the judge and taunt the judge and say, you can't touch me, you can't throw me in custody, because the judge and the court still has the power to effectuate custody. It's not the purpose for the court coming there. The assurance of no custody is for both the homeless service agencies and the participant to understand that the work and the accomplishments that they provide the court are significant to the point where custody is not an effective remedy to resolving these cases, and that custody, in effect, would compromise and the work that's been accomplished by both participant and agency, and that it would essentially set people back to the streets and force them to reutilize those homeless service agencies in order to propel themselves to employment and housing. There are four monthly steps in the homeless court calendar. I'm sorry, before I go on to that, I will go to the entry criteria that each of the homeless service agencies provides when it refers clients into the homeless court. Each agency has a set target population. Each agency has a different mission and focus for helping people reclaim their lives. Not all of the agencies offer the same services, and not all of the participants who appear in front of the homeless court have the same needs. So the homeless court recognizes that it needs to address individuals on a case-by-case, individual basis, and it also recognizes that the homeless service agencies are in the best position to assess the individuals, develop an action plan, and essentially challenge each individual to make the most of the opportunities that are offered in their program. The court, the homeless court recognizes that the agencies referring people into the court, homeless court, have limited resources, limited staff time, and that their challenge to their clients is to lead strong, life-affirming lives, to help build a future, because they want to make sure clients are effective when they leave the program, and the providers understand that their credibility and that their work is on the line when they stand in front of the court. We recognize clients may have a hard time. We do understand that it is often hard to overcome homelessness and that people may relapse. And while we don't advertise that people can come back a second time, if someone does return to the homeless court, we ask, what happened last time that you were not able to successfully make it through and that you relapsed, that you have another criminal offense? And we address those issues more specifically if someone appears again. So each program develops its own entry criteria for referring somebody in to the homeless court. For some programs, that may be completion of a particular class. For another program, it may be completion of a particular phase in their program. And yet we have other programs that have, for example, 10 criteria, and if an individual meets 5 or 6 of those criteria, they will make those referrals into the homeless court. The judge, the prosecution, the defense attorneys understand the differences of the different agencies, understands the way clients present from each of these agencies. We recognize that when an individual comes and they are dressed up, they're wearing a suit and tie, and they shake hands with you, they are coming from Salvation Army. We understand when another individual would come from their program, and they literally have 10, 15, 20 pages of certificates, advocacy letters, meeting slips that was lovingly called the 5-pound packet. They came from St. Vincent de Paul Village. We also understood when somebody came and they looked you straight in the eye, they gave you a firm handshake, and they introduced themselves, they came from Second Chance. Military personnel, they present in their own particular ways too, at parade rest, yes sir, no sir, and the court has come to understand that individuals have their challenges and their needs, but as our judge noted yesterday at the homeless court session in San Diego, that the court sessions themselves are a significant venue for self-affirmation and reconciliation. That you can look at the list of offenses an individual brings and you can say, you know, the past looked really ugly. But you can then look at the accomplishment the individual brings from their programs through their advocacy letters and packet, and you can note the marked difference of who that individual is and what they've accomplished in order to resolve those cases. So now I'm going to go to the monthly court calendar, which I believe all of you have in front of you. This is where we develop this color-coded calendar in order for all of the agencies and the participants. We're not talking just the homeless service agencies. We're talking criminal justice agencies as well as the homeless service agencies, so that everybody knows what to expect during the course of the year when they sign people up for the homeless court. At the top yellow bar, it lists the month and the agency that is hosting that particular month's counseling and court session. We start every month with the green box, which is when the provider's interest list is submitted. Okay, candidly, it's the end of the month, and it leads into the following month where the actual court session is held. But that interest list is where the homeless service agency lists the individual's name, any AKAs, names they're also known by, their date of birth, which is the significant information that the court needs to conduct its research. But they will also list other demographic information that might help the court conduct its research and distinguish one individual from another, especially since there are a lot of common names. That list is sent to the public defender's office, essentially letting both the client and the prosecution and the court know that there's an attorney representing that individual from the beginning. The public defender's office, on the box designated in green, effectively surrenders those lists to both the court and the prosecution, surrendering the client for a hearing 30 days down the road. The following week is spent by the court researching the calendar, checking each individual's name and date of birth against the offenses that they research all the screens in the computer system. If the court clerks have any questions, they in turn will email us back asking those questions, and we will use email to then get in touch with clients and the homeless service agencies to clarify any names, any legal issues, any identity issues, so that we can make sure that the calendar is ready when we get to the hearing. The following week, as indicated in the blue box, the prosecution takes the court calendar, reviews its records, its discovery, and the offenses on calendar to then propose a plea bargain, a resolution of the cases as they're identified on calendar. We will deal with both active cases where an individual has yet to make an appearance and further proceedings where the individual has already entered a plea in their case and may have promised the court that it would attend meetings, do public work service, or pay fines, but has failed to do so. The homeless court will also address warrants, and those warrants will be recalled. We will then review the prosecution's offers, and we might call the prosecution asking them why they have particular concerns about an individual, or conversely, even call back to get the program and the individual for advanced counseling to prepare more fully for when we meet, to make sure everything is addressed before the court hearing. We try to use the time in between these four major steps to be fully prepared and resolve the cases for the court hearing. We'll review the prosecution's offers. We will then meet the following week, which is designated, I'll say, in a pink box, dark pink box, for the counseling session at the host agency, whether it's St. Vincent de Paul Village or Veterans Village of San Diego. We meet at 9 o'clock. We have a full contingent of defense attorneys there. We meet with all the clients in advance, and often the the agency caseworkers will be there with their clients to help facilitate the conversation, to make sure everybody's there, and to answer any questions that might be had. But this is really a time where the individual gets to, shall we say, face their greatest fear. They get to see what their case is all about. They get to see what the prosecution is interested in for resolution of this case, and they get to step away and take a breath in preparation for the following week's court hearing. But most important is they get to meet with their defense attorney. They don't have to make a decision 5 minutes later or the same day, am I going to do this or am I going to do that, before they stand in front of a judge. We meet with them, we talk about all the criminal justice implications, and then we switch the conversation to what have they been doing in their program. We review the advocacy packet. When we first started the homeless court and we started talking about their program, we'd ask how they spent their time, what have they been doing in their programs, and the response, almost as a rule, was nothing. And they wouldn't respond or elaborate about how they spent their day. We had to ask it a number of different ways. How do you spend your day? Tell me what you do when you get up in the morning. What's the class that, or activity that's most important to you? To get people to realize that what they're doing in their program is the activity and of value to the court. Previously, participants only thought that was something that their caseworker wanted them to do. They didn't understand that that's something that both the court and the community is looking at, and that's the value of one of the largest values of the homeless court. It's not just even resolving the cases, though that is very important. It is the recognition that what people do in their programs is of value, and that people have done something successful, that it's their offense, it's the crime that we don't want people engaged in. It's not the individual that is less than desirable. It's that that individual has had hard times, but that they have an opportunity, and that they effectively show they have reclaimed their lives. And the homeless court effectively reconciles the offense with the proof of their accomplishments to understand and tell the community at large that there is a greater public safety because these people won't be committing these offenses. They actually have constructive things to hold on to. They have a future. And people used to be really nervous, some actually still are, when they appear in court, because they understand the power of the court to implement an order that might compromise what they've gained in their program. The participants who appear in the homeless court are looking to the future. They're looking to gain employment. They're looking to successfully complete the next phase in their program. They're looking to move out of the program into an independent life. And they understand that the court has the potential to effectuate an order that might compromise that. So they are relieved and they are most appreciative for the court's order that recognizes their work against the fines that they had previously promised to pay, against the public work service that had previously been ordered. And the court essentially looks at that individual's work and accomplishment in the program as a different currency. They might not have, shall we say, been paid in wages, but they have been paid in certificates. They've been paid in a much fuller, healthier life. And that's what we all look to when we are looking for public safety. So I'm going to backstep to the beginning of this. When we were looking at these criminal offenses being issued, when the police are called upon to issue a citation or arrest somebody for illegal lodging, for being drunk in public, for theft or using a controlled substance and the like, the society is saying, we don't like this behavior, we don't like this activity, make it stop. Sadly, the traditional court has limited, the police and the court have limited tools in which to effectuate those changes. The police can issue a citation, they can arrest somebody and throw them in custody. The court can make an order to say and say, you should not engage in this activity, you should remain law-abiding, you should pay a fine, you should go into custody. And if somebody returns to court and they commit repeated offenses, the traditional court's reflex is to increase the fine, increase the level of custody to send a stronger message. But what the traditional court was lacking, and the reason the homeless court came into being, and other collaborative justice courts now too, is the realization that there are limits in the traditional court setting, and that collaboration, especially working with homeless service agencies, is what can truly effectuate changes and effective resolution of cases and changes in individuals and public safety across our community. In short, it is the homeless court is building off of the hard work and relationship that homeless service providers have with their clients, the trust that these agencies and these caseworkers have with their clients, and that work, those relationships, that trust is then transferred to the court, which responds by recognizing that work and honoring that with court orders that help, again, dismiss cases and resolve the further proceedings. But even when an individual stands at the homeless court and enters a guilty plea to a particular offense, that person is given credit for the work they've already done in their program activities to address any court orders and concerns. If, unfortunately, and it is rare, we don't have everything together, that there are other concerns that the prosecution or court might have, or, candidly, an individual has not presented enough information of the proof of their activities, we will continue a case to answer these concerns before we go forward. And so the homeless court looks to public safety and realize it is not just defined with a conviction and incarceration, but that a smart on crime approach is effectuated through treatment and addressing the underlying behaviors and a client exhibits, and that when a client is involved in the community, first through their agency and then in the larger community, they are leading more inclined to lead a constructive and life-affirming activities both in their agency and out in the community. And when the court order recognizes the advocacy packet and what an individual has done in their program, it is reaffirming the strength of each homeless service agency and the work that an individual has done, so that they realize what they are doing in their life is important in that respect. And so my cautionary tales for you would be, you will likely be turning to your prosecutors and your defense attorneys to get them involved in a homeless court. And the prosecution will be concerned with, how did we obtain public safety in this? And the defense attorney will say, well, I already have enough work. What's the value in this for me? And collaboration from a prosecution standpoint, a prosecutor might feel like I'm giving up the power to decide if I am listening to a homeless service agency's work and recognizing their accomplishments. I might need something further from them. The defense attorney might in turn say, I get my clients when the court appoints me, not when a homeless service agency refers them to me. And these are mind shifts you're going to have to face in the criminal justice system. But increasingly, both prosecution and defense attorneys realize there are limits in the traditional court setting. And the prosecution and the defense attorneys are recognizing that there's a greater value to working in the community and building relationships with treatment providers and staff that answer their concerns. When you hear, sadly, sometimes you might hear a no from a prosecutor, defense attorney, or the court, ask them what are their concerns. Have them elaborate on the challenges they're facing. And take that answer of no as an opportunity to explore these concerns and address these issues, as an opportunity for your community to build responses and seek solutions, and that treatment and collaborations actually offer them greater tools to seek justice, promote confidence in the court, and provide access to justice. Again, not just for the clients to get into court, but for the courts to get to the clients, for them to actively resolve and successfully resolve those cases, and to make sure that what the people are doing when they resolve those cases are things that will lead fuller lives and provide for our communities. And that's effectively promoting both the dignity and responsibility, not just for the clients, but for judges too, because judges and prosecutors want to see solutions. And they are just as frustrated as our clients and as our agency staff in the same old approach that the traditional court faces. And I don't mean to disparage the traditional court entirely. There is a great value to utilizing that process. But the collaborative process offers a wider range of services and solutions for everyone involved. I know we're running out of time. Do we do questions and answers now?
If you want to, we can go ahead and go on to that. I did have a couple questions for you, and thanks for that information. I know especially for the service providers we have on the call, and I know we have quite a few of them. I know that will be really helpful for them to bring back, and as they think through developing their homeless court, trying to think through who are the key partners that they need to make right from the beginning and what, in a tangible way, this calendar actually looks like and how they move that process forward. I also noticed that we have quite a few folks from different legal service providers on the call. How do you suggest that they become more actively involved in working with homeless veterans and providing services to the community service organizations that work with these homeless veterans?
It's really important for both legal and treatment to talk to each other and recognize each other as equal partners, because legal can make a decision for a conviction or for the disposition of the case that may affect the treatment options available to an individual. And it may compromise what a treatment agency can do, not just in the course of its treatment, but in what it can do in helping somebody get employment and housing afterwards that effectively compromises the prosecution's attempt to get people on a lawful lifestyle.
That's such an important point, making sure you have that translation between the multiple parties, that this is beneficial for everyone involved, not just for the service provider, not just for the homeless veteran, but for those folks in the legal community as well. So
correct.
That was a big question that I had coming out of this, and I know that we have a lot of really knowledgeable people on the line, so I want to actually go ahead and open it up for Q&A. We have about 14 minutes before we're going to be cut off today, so let's do as many questions as we can. And then at the end, if we don't get to your question, like I mentioned before, feel free to send me an email, and I'll make sure we not only send that question over to Steve, but also have it included in the notes that we're going to put up for this call. So, Paula, if we can go ahead and go to Q&A, please.
At this time, if you'd like to ask a question, please press star 1 on your telephone keypad. Again, in order to ask a question, please press star 1. You have a question from the line of Don Harper.
Yes, Steve, Don Harper, Sacramento, California. I was down at the San Diego stand down back in 1990 as a graduate down there, as an intern down there to understand how the stand down happens. I've been in Sacramento. We've done a Sacramento stand down here for almost 20 years. And I'm curious about, in our stand down, when the veterans come to our stand down, they get hours after they come to the judge, you know, that they have to complete a certain amount of hours. In this new homeless stand down, I understand you're saying that the veterans come to the court and they have completed their commitments prior to coming to the court. Is that a big distinction between the stand down homeless program and the homeless court in general?
Yes. The major focus is for work that people have already accomplished while they've been at stand down. It's part of why, yes, we've had our budget crisis here in San Diego, and we had 1 year where we held court on the same day that stand down opened. We found that it's much more successful and advisable that people who have been participating in stand down longer are going to be more successful. We realize stand down is a window of opportunity for both the courts and the clients, and that there's a great deal of there's a momentum that can build from that. But we purposely try to we make sure that our court is not held on the first day anymore. We want to make sure they get settled in, that they have some tangible activities that they present when they stand before the court. But we also, on more complex cases, we will have a stand-down follow-up calendar, and we'll hold proceedings at VBSD and meet with those participants there. And we will ask them to keep a log of what they've done post-stand-down. That might be their meetings with the VA. That may be getting into one of the other programs. And we will present that to the court at that follow-up calendar.
Is the big distinction, though, that the stand-down, the vets have not completed their commitments until they face the judge, where this new homeless court, the veterans have already completed their progress already when they come in front of the judge. Is that correct?
Well, actually, we go back to stand down is where the homeless court was born. And when we first started off, we would be going all day Friday, all day Saturday, all day Sunday, counseling people and resolving their cases. And so we would recognize that they needed something tangible. We wanted to make sure that the stand down court was real, that there it held people accountable. And it recognized their efforts, one, for showing up at stand down voluntarily, and two, for accessing the services there, was critical to resolve these cases. And there would be people that would come to us and say, you know, I'm just ready to give it up. I'll go into custody. And we would take them back to we would actually walk them to a lot of the agencies that were on site, introduce them to the workers there, and sometimes take them to their tent leaders to help motivate them and get them to work for something more than just giving up in incarceration.
Okay,
we also recognize that when it came to the monthly homeless court, that there is so much more that can be done to help people move their lives along. And that's part of why we have a monthly calendar. We know that agencies who refer their clients in first, have them meet that entry criteria I was talking about, a particular class, a particular phase of the program, particular list of criteria. But in addition to meeting that criteria, there is then an entire month of activities that an individual is engaged in from the time they sign up to the time of the court hearing. And thanks for raising this one, Don. In the traditional court setting, if an individual is incarcerated, at least in San Diego, they get $50 off their fine for each day of incarceration. If you were to take the one-month calendar and you were to credit it $50 for each day, you're effectively talking a $1,500 fine. We're not encouraging people to go in custody, but we're recognizing that the value of people involved in their programs day in, day out is much more labor-intensive, much more constructive than time in custody, and is essentially, if you were going to put it in the $50 credits, it's $1,500 of work that's going to satisfy any fines that the court would otherwise level. Does that help you?
Yes, it does. Thank you very much, Stephen. Thank you for all the work you've done in this program over the years. I salute what you're doing. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thanks, Don, and thanks, Steve, for providing that clarification. Go on to another question.
Your next question comes from the line of Susan Harrison.
Hi, this is Susan Harrison from Eugene, and actually I just wanted to make sure that I got your email address, Ms. Crone, because I was going to forward the VHA directive for reengaging with veterans with severe mental illness, and I think that this ties into it very strongly, and there are some new metrics coming out around that.
Great. My email address, and that's actually good. We'll toss my email address out again. It's bcrone, so bcrone@nchv.org. Susan, are you with COVO by any chance?
No, I'm VA.
Oh, you're with VA. Oh, okay, great.
I'm a veteran justice outreach social worker, and that directive is a Veterans Health Administration.
Okay, and I'll is it okay if I also then post that up on the conference webpage that we have set here to share with other participants?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, great. Thank you.
Thank you.
Your next question comes from the line of David Owen.
Hi, Steve. Yeah, I was just curious. The selection of trying to determine what judge would be best suited to initiate. We don't have a homeless court program here. We don't have a homeless veterans court, but there's a growing grassroots effort, with myself included in it, that we want to try and set that up. Unfortunately,
where are you located?
In Portland, Oregon.
Okay.
We have our geographics are that we have three counties in the metro area. So we have three different circuit courts or district courts to try and work through.
You really want a judge that understands treatment, it's helpful if the judge understands the military culture and circumstances leading up to it. In San Diego, we are really fortunate to have a Judge Crowell who was in Special Forces for 30-plus years. He's been on the bench. It escapes me easily, 10-plus years. But he is involved in the community, has been in touch with and known about our service agencies, and understands the importance of relating with individuals on their military service, but most important, addressing their substance abuse and their trauma as we're reviewing their cases.
Okay.
Selecting a judge, it is really going to the judiciary, asking around people who have had experiences appearing in front of these judges and presenting the problem and seeing if they will buy into developing such a court, participating with such a court. Judges, as much as prosecution and defense attorneys, they want positive things in their community too. It's helping them understand the value of working in a collaborative setting to address these problems.
Do you have any suggestions for coping with the different municipalities that we have here?
And
as far as trying to organize between the different judiciaries, because they're all going to have, if there's some in Washington County and some in Clackamas County and some in Multnomah County.
We've had our courts take the lead on that, but also we've had our prosecutors and defense attorneys help bridge that gap because they often have people they know working in these other counties.
Okay.
And sometimes it's enough to write a letter explaining what your program's doing, explaining the goals, and the purpose of whether it's a homeless court or a veterans court or what the program itself is doing. Say it's the VA helping somebody obtain employment, helping them go through some course of treatment. That provides everyone a fuller measure of who that individual is and the circumstances they're facing. But you usually start with the defense attorney and sharing that information. But you need to, in a global network, to just address those concerns with all involved to get their buy-in. And I mean all involved, prosecution, defense, court, and the treatment providers.
Good. Well, thank you very much, Steve.
Thank you, David.
Now, I wish we had more time, but we're actually right about at the end. The good news is that you should be getting, everyone who's participating in the call today, as long as I have your email address, you should be getting a survey from today's call within the next couple of hours. And there are some boxes in there where you can fill in additional information if we can follow up with you and if we can get you in contact with Steve. We really want to make sure that we move forward on these initiatives because I know there are a lot of organizations that are really wanting to push this forward in their community. So once again, I just want to really thank Steve for joining us today. A lot of great information. You've been doing amazing work for a long time. So very thankful that you could be here with us. And thanks. Thanks, everyone, for participating.
Thank you all.
Thank you. This concludes your conference. You may now disconnect.